Henry Crawford has quite made up his mind to make Fanny Price fall in love with him. For her part, Fanny has not the slightest suspicion of his intentions. Her thoughts are elsewhere, with her cousin Edmund and her brother William at sea.
I tell you, Mary, I cannot be satisfied without Fanny Price, without making a small hole in her heart. Have you not seen the wonderful improvement that has taken place in her looks in the last 6 weeks?
She is just what she was in October, Henry. The truth is that she is now the only girl at Mansfield for you to notice, and you know what you were like. You must have somebody.
You are mistaken. I never was so long in company with a girl in my life, trying to entertain her and succeeding so ill. She's thinking, I will not like you. I am determined not to like you. But I say she shall.
Ah, there you are, Fanny. Did you not hear me calling you?
No, Aunt.
When I call the chickens, they are more attentive than you are, Fanny.
Forgive me.
You appear to have a letter.
For me?
There is only one Fanny Price residing at Mansfield Park, I believe.
Thank you, Aunt.
Distressing news?
No, indeed. Oh!
And things with grimace to subdue an affair may justly be reckoned an ass may justly be reckoned. Oh!
Mr. Crawford, do forgive me.
Why, Miss Price, you nearly knocked me down.
Are you hurt?
I have broken nothing myself, but I cannot speak so confidently for this rose bush.
That stem has always been a little out of kilter.
I know how it feels.
I have wonderful news, Mr. Crawford.
Praise unto the gods, Miss Price, for whatever brings a smile upon your face surely brings a smile to mine also.
My brother William is coming to visit us. My brother, who I have not seen these 8 long years.
I am heartily glad for you. To be without a much-loved brother for so long a time is a painful wound to bear.
Yes, indeed. I have missed him greatly.
But now he is coming home. Hurrah!
Yes.
Hurrah!
Edmund, that must be Mr. William now.
Quite possibly, Aunt.
Quite possibly. Whoever else might be expected
what
to be...
What I mean, Aunt, is that Fanny has not seen her brother for a very long time, and it might indeed be kind to let her meet William alone.
I'm sure I've never heard of such a thing in all my life. But if my company is not desired, then I shall return to my paw basket, I'm sure.
William? William, is it really you?
Fan? Look at you.
Look at you. You're big.
So are you. Oh, Fanny. Look what's happened to us. We've grown up.
I've thought of you every day.
You've been my most loyal friend. All those letters. It's all right, Fan. Look at us. We're all right. And look, we're together again.
Yes. Yes, isn't it wonderful?
Later that evening, Henry Crawford watches brother and sister together. And as he does so, he is no longer in doubt of the capabilities of Fanny's heart. She has feeling, genuine feeling. It would be something to be loved by such a girl.
We were above a mile from the shore, sir, and bombarded soundly on two sides.
Oh, my dear William. I'm quite afraid just listening. No, Plug, it's just a story.
Shush. Now, go on, William. Tell us more.
I was upon the bridge with the captain. He never stirred from his place.
Well, a good leader must inspire by example.
Oh, yes, Sir Thomas. He was a fine gentleman. And as we stood there, he said, "Put your coats on, men, for I fear it will rain, and I do not wish to see you catch cold."
Cold is indeed a very inconvenient thing at any time.
And as we struggled into our jackets, a great hail of cannon was loosed from the French. And the next thing I knew, we were all in the water. And when we staggered onto the shore, I had still one arm into my jacket and one arm out.
Wonderful. And what of your captain?
He was killed, sir.
A brave man.
Henry Crawford longs to have been at sea, to have seen and done and suffered so much. The glory of heroism, of usefulness, of endurance makes his habits of selfish indulgence appear in shameful contrast. He wishes himself to be a William Price instead of what he is.
I do not like, William, that you should leave us without having the opportunity to see your sister dance.
I have heard, sir, about the dances at Northampton.
No, they are, I believe, well attended. But I think perhaps a dance at home would be more appropriate.
My dear Sir Thomas, if Julia were at home, or dearest Mrs. Rushworth, to afford a reason for such an occasion, then naturally...
My daughters have their own pleasures at Brighton, and I hope are very happy. But the dance which I think of giving at Mansfield will be for William and Fanny.
What a wonderful idea, Father.
We shall arrange it for shortly before William is due to return to Portsmouth.
Thank you, sir.
Uncle, I've never been to a ball.
Well, we shall make it a wonderful evening, then.
What a very good idea.
Edmund is at this time particularly full of cares. His mind is deeply occupied in the consideration of two important events now at hand, which are to fix his fate in life. Ordination and matrimony.
Come, Pug. We'll take a walk in the shrubbery and you can look at the snowdrops.
Soon he is to go to Peterborough, where he will receive ordination. And as to Miss Crawford, everything depends for Edmund on just one question.
Does she love me, Pug? What do you think? There is so much on which we do not agree. She prefers London to the country. She detests privacy. We are not much like one another. Do I have any cause to hope that she might put these differences aside and one day be my wife?
Miss Crawford, please excuse me, but I could not possibly...
You can see what a collection of necklaces I have, Miss Price, and more by half than I ever think to use.
I am very grateful.
You have a beautiful cross which your brother bought you from Malta, did he not?
Yes, indeed.
And you wear it upon the most charming satin ribbon.
It was William's intention to get me a chain, but, well, it was too expensive.
But now you have a ball to prepare for, so do oblige me and see if there's a little necklace here of mine which would do for the occasion.
You are very kind.
Fanny looks and looks, longing to know which is the least valuable.
This is simple and lovely.
Yes, indeed. I like it very much. When I wear this necklace, I shall always think of you and how very kind you are.
You must think of someone else, too, when you wear it. You must think of Henry, for he gave it to me.
Oh, no, Miss Crawford, then I could not possibly...
My dear child, say no more about it. Such a trifle is not worth half so many words.
Edmund!
I beg your pardon for being here, but I have something for you. A little chain for William's cross.
Oh.
You ought to have had it a week ago.
It's beautiful. But...
What is it, Fanny?
Miss Crawford has this very day also given me a chain. I shall return it.
No! She will be most upset and think it unwanted. No, what kindness she has shown. You must not hurt her feelings. I could not bear to see that happen between the two dearest people I have on this earth. Wear hers and keep mine.
Fanny has heard right. She is one of the two dearest people in Edmund's life. She has never heard him speak so openly before. But she knows he will marry Mary Crawford. Fanny holds his chain to her heart as if it is the only gift she has ever received. The entire family are gathered in the drawing room when Fanny comes down for the ball.
Do you see what has happened to our little niece, my dear?
She looks very well. I sent Chapman to dress her.
She looks more than well. She is a beautiful woman.
She has reason to look well with all her advantages. Only think, Sir Thomas, what we have given her. What would she have been if we had not taken her in hand?
Fanny sees that she is approved, and her consciousness of looking well makes her look still better.
Miss Price, I do hope you will do me the honour of reserving the first two dances in my name.
I should be delighted, Mr. Crawford.
And I hope you will both honour us by leading the ball.
Sir, I could not possibly...
Oh, it must be so, my dear. Do you not see? All these people have come along with but one purpose in mind. To meet you.
Fanny is conducted to the top of the room by Henry Crawford, and they are joined by the rest of the dancers. She can hardly believe it. To be placed above so many elegant young women.
Come, Fanny. Let us engage upon our duty with the seriousness with which it deserves.
They are all looking at us, Mr. Crawford.
Then we must do our best to entertain them in that case. We have the music. Let us dance. What a lovely chain you are wearing, Miss Price. But alas, it is not mine.
Yours?
My sister's, that is.
She very kindly gave me a chain, but it did not fit my cross.
Poor chain. Its heart is broken, I think, to have failed you.
The evening affords Edmund little pleasure, however, and as the hour draws late, Fanny finds him alone and downhearted.
Edmund, what is wrong?
I should not spoil your night.
Tell me, please.
I went to see Miss Crawford earlier, to engage her for the first two dances. She has never danced with a clergyman, she said. She never will. I wish there had been no ball ever. And tomorrow I leave for Peterborough.
I'm very sorry you are sad.
I know Miss Crawford's disposition to be as sweet and faultless as your own, but the influence of her former companions gives her conversation a tinge of something wrong. She does not think evil, but she speaks it. I know it's only playfulness, but it grieves me to the soul.
It is the effect of education. It is a way of being she has come to think amusing.
Her uncle and aunt, her upbringing, what she expects of life. They have injured her with their attitudes and manners.
He takes her hand and presses it to his cheek.
Dearest Fanny, she will never marry me. I have nothing to offer her.
You are a good man, Edmund. Truly, Miss Crawford is quite mistaken if she cannot see that your heart is worth 1,000 gallant sea captains and prosperous lawyers.
It is not long before the ball is ended, and by dawn, Henry Crawford and William are upon their way to Northampton. It is a heavy, melancholy day. Soon after the second breakfast, Edmund bids them goodbye for a week and mounts his horse for Peterborough. Nothing remains of the previous night but remembrances.
Oh, Fanny, you must do something to keep me awake. Fetch the cards. I feel so very stupid.
Yes, Aunt.
And that makes 31. 4 in hand and 8 in the crib. You are to deal, ma'am.
Fanny thinks of the difference 24 hours can make in this room. Last night it had been all hopes and smiles, noise and brilliancy. Now it is languor and solitude.
We miss our two young men.
Oh, indeed.
There is no reason to suppose that William may not visit us often in the future. As to Edmund, we must learn to do without him. Once he is ordained, we shall see little of him, I expect.
Fanny listens, the touch of Edmund's cheek upon her hand still lingering. The loss of him, a terrible, unspoken blow.